Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast. Minutes past 8 o'clock. It is Monday morning, March the 29th, 2021. Good morning, everybody. I'm Scott Micklin, and thanks for tuning in to KSJE 90.9 FM over the air here in San Juan County, New Mexico, 103.3 FM over the air in Durango, Colorado, and streaming everywhere on Earth from our website, ksje.com. Also, welcome to our viewers who are joining us this morning on our visual radio platforms, the KSJE Facebook page, our YouTube channel, and our Twitter account. We're glad that you are with us as well, everybody. Coming up this morning, my guest on the program, Farmington Police Chief Steve Hebby, will be here in just a few more moments. We'll be talking about police reform in New Mexico. There were some pieces of legislation before the state legislature, and we'll talk a little bit about those and some other things that are going on with the department, things going on across the country, that and more coming up in the next few moments right here on KSJE, so stay tuned for that. Next hour, we'll switch gears to classical music. Mick Hess will be here roving with the arts. This morning, Mick is featuring music all regarding spring. Selections from Stravinsky and Vivaldi coming up today at 9:06 on Roving with the Arts with Mick Hess on KSJE. Don't forget, of course, in addition to Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, we invite you to connect with us on our Instagram page as well. And let's talk about the weather forecast for just a moment, shall we? Sunshine outside at the moment, 36 degrees in Farmington. We are on our way to a sunny, mild, and breezy day today. 69 degrees for a high this afternoon, clear and 36 overnight. Mostly sunny but cooler tomorrow with a high of 52. Windy overnight Tuesday with a low of 23. Then things start to warm up again in time for the weekend. Take a look, 56 by Wednesday. Sunshine 68 by Thursday, 71 on Friday. How about mid-70s for Saturday and Sunday with overnight lows warming up too to the mid to upper 40s. Well, let me turn to my guest who is here with me this morning, a man who needs no introduction, really, but I'll give him one anyway. Farmington Police Chief Steve Hebby, also one of the co-hosts of the Cop Shop with FPD, seen right here on this very radio station. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Scott.
You bet. Thanks for coming in. I appreciate it because I know this is a topic you've talked about on the Cop Shop numerous times, and of course something that takes up a lot of your time to kind of watch this legislation that was moving through the 60-day session. And so let's start there about police reform, because everyone seems to be talking about it nationwide, that maybe we need to reform the police, but of course the devil's in the details, and just how do you do it? So there were some bills that you liked and some bills that maybe you didn't like so much. Is that a fair statement?
I think that's a fair statement. I think, you know, we're getting ready for the Derek Chauvin trial to begin.
Right, today. Yeah.
Today. And so police reform has been a hot topic really since the Floyd protests that erupted last about June 1st of last year. So we've had 9 months or so of really looking at what are we trying to get to. And I think that's the big question, Scott, is it's one thing to talk about reform, but when we don't have a central view of what we're trying to achieve, we just want something to stop or something to change. You know, that's a pretty ill-defined goal. So this was an important session. There were lots of ideas kicked around down in Santa Fe about how they were going to fix policing. I hate the notion of this stuff happening without that broader discussion of what's our goal. I mean, you don't try and set a budget here for the radio station. You don't try and set your programming without some idea of what you're trying to accomplish ultimately. And the same thing's true in policing. We should be aiming to do better. That absolutely has to happen in American law enforcement. I've been saying that for years. But what better looks like is a debatable question.
Right. And so the bills that were being talked about in Santa Fe this session, one has advanced. A couple others did not. And so one regarded qualified immunity for law enforcement, and that was something that I know you had a big concern about.
I did.
And a lot of municipalities and other entities had a concern about that bill.
Yes. So that was HB 4. It did pass with several amendments, so it looked different than it started off. If you remember last summer, the discussion was really on holding bad actors accountable in policing, and so stripping qualified immunity away, that was protecting bad officers and preventing people from getting justice. That wound up changing quite a bit here in New Mexico, in our version of it. Other states have different versions. Our state quickly expanded it where, A, that would not be the individual officer or actor held accountable. So no individual employees in government are going to be now personally liable for whatever the lawsuit is. So that's a significant change from how it was originally presented. And then
right.
Number two, it isn't just police. You know, it's almost all government. And the initial bill was all government, and that there was no cap on what you could win in a lawsuit. That had the municipalities very worried, especially the smaller ones down south. In the end, it wound up with a $2 million cap, which is still a lot higher than many budgets for cities in New Mexico. Very small cities have a million, million and a half budget. One good lawsuit and verdict could break them. So they were worried. And then number two, just the change from it's now not police officers, it's not bad police officers, it's any government official that functions, with two exceptions. The two exceptions are legislators, which of course is
surprise, shocking,
stunningly shocking.
Okay, interesting.
And
but of course they're part time. They're not really employees, I guess, necessarily, right? They're per diem elected legislators. But go ahead.
Yeah, I thought they earned para, but maybe they don't.
They might retirement, right?
Yeah.
That might be true.
So
they certainly put in time. We don't want to
put in time.
Say anything against that. And a lot of times, sometimes.
And then the second group that was written out is judges.
Okay.
So, you know, I rankle a little at the judge absolution. Not that I have anything against judges. Just, you know, if we're going to have people who've been doing the job for years and years, and judges, by the time they get named to judges, they've been in the legal field for oftentimes decades. They've got months to make decisions on whatever case is in front of them. And we're going to give them qualified immunity, and we're not going to give it to officers who maybe have 2 or 3 years in the field and are making a decision that's split second with enormous consequences. But that's the way it went.
Okay. And so today, and I'll ask you a couple things about that in just a moment, but so today the House and Senate passed this bill.
Yes.
It's awaiting then the governor's signature, and she has not signed it yet. That's where we are today on Monday the 29th.
That's correct. We expect that she's going to,
right?
But yes, she has not.
Got you. You mentioned some of the caps on the lawsuits and things along that sometimes higher than the entire city budgets and things like that of some of these smaller communities. But don't a lot of these things get paid by insurance that these municipalities have anyway?
Well, yes and no.
Okay.
So there's a self-insurance fund within the municipal league. And if you watched some of the testimony that went along, it was the municipal league self-insurers that were the most worried that this was going to break their bank. In other words, one or two of these lawsuits from any of these communities, and there won't be a municipal league self-insurance fund anymore.
Gotcha.
And without that, those small cities don't have insurance. So somebody like Farmington,
too cost prohibitive to buy it on the open market,
I guess,
without this type of specialized local fund.
So we have, for our city, we're self-insured, which means taxpayer funds pay for it up to $500,000. And then we go out and we seek additional protection from private carriers for anything over $500,000, which we do not go over very often, fortunately. So that keeps the rates relatively moderate. But as they raise that cap, that's the fear, that you'll begin going over those figures. And I know the Albuquerque mayor had led police chiefs and city officials from around the state in some meetings on it, and they are extremely concerned about what this will mean for their ability to meet their lawsuits.
Right. I guess some of the proponents would say it's just the cost of doing business. If there's been a mistake or been an error in judgment or things like that, then certainly shouldn't someone be paying for that, the error in judgment or things like that, which may include a loss of life or a serious injury or whatever the case may be. We're not going to certainly litigate things here, but but certainly a lot of times when it gets to these high numbers, there's been some horrible thing that has happened.
Yes, and that's the rub, right? Right now, I think in America, there's plenty of lawsuits. So it's hard to believe we're making government better by just suing them more. But you know that is certainly the counter argument is they want more at the state level. Now, they've had the ability to sue in federal court. What this law does is now give you the ability to sue in state court. And I'm not sure, you know, I'm not a lawyer. I can't tell you why they're more interested in suing in state court than in federal court. But that is kind of their goal. Now, what we are hearing in some of the testimony about it is they expect that lawsuits in state court now will increase by over 60% as a result of the law. So that's a stunning number of additional lawsuits. So imagine all the tax dollars now that's going to go for paying for attorneys, for paying for me to go and sit in depositions. So what you want is a system that if the police or government screws up and somebody is badly injured, then we are held accountable. Absolutely agree with that. What you don't want is a system that incentivizes frivolous or petty lawsuits that now tie cities up and officials up in court battles for years, all at taxpayer expense. And that's what we're at right now.
Got you. And that's true. I can see that your point, but I don't know if with our current criminal justice system, if we have any better way to do that.
I'm not sure either.
Yeah. And so there you are. But let me go back to the thing that you mentioned, too, and what some of this legislation was aimed at trying to get rid of, or at least to identify and help to prevent, were these bad apples, these bad police officers and things along that. I know in your career you've run into a few, and I think you've acted fairly decisively when that has happened to either eliminate them from the force or act pretty quickly, get them off the streets, whatever the case may be. But not every chief does that. And I guess that's part of the other frustration from the public is that some of these folks are still wearing a badge.
You know, I think that is some of the public's frustration, but some of it, I think they represents a lack of knowledge of what's really going on. And then some of it is, from my perspective, it's more of the same with the HB4. We create systems that make it harder for chiefs to do their job, and then we're stunned that they don't do it. So the last year, during this same session, they passed the Public Employees Bargaining Act, PEBA, it's called. That gives mandatory, the state came in and said, mandatorily, all unions are going to be able to have binding arbitration. And I've talked about this on the Cop Shop. The Minneapolis Star Tribune did an excellent article on looking at the impact of binding arbitration on officers that were fired. And roughly 50% of the officers that are fired that go to binding arbitration get their job back. So when you set up a system that makes it harder for chiefs to accomplish their goal of getting bad apples out of there, we can't be surprised when that's happened. So last year when this was going through, I was down in Santa Fe and I was talking to legislators and I was saying, you are going to make it harder for us to get rid of bad cops. And it sailed through, it passed, it's signed by the governor. And 2 months later we have George Floyd and everybody's stunned that we can't get rid of bad cops. So the system is set up right now that it makes it more difficult for chiefs to be able to get bad actors out of there. Now, already officers had the ability to sue a chief if you fire him and he thinks he shouldn't have been fired.
Sure.
So it's not like there weren't rights for employees to have against an employer if we were acting unfairly. But this sets up a system that makes it almost guaranteed that you are going to water down discipline throughout New Mexico in all unions, but in particular in law enforcement. You are going to make it harder for chiefs to get rid of bad cops. What to your point was that some chiefs don't do that, and you're right. I will tell you though, when you looked at the decertification process that we had, there were 130 some officers that are awaiting decertification actions down at the Santa Fe Law Enforcement Academy, and those are chiefs from around New Mexico that sent in paperwork saying this guy has acted badly, and I don't think he should be a police officer anymore, and the state wasn't acting on it. So that was one of the things I was hoping that we'd be able to get fixed this year, and I think that we've taken a big step towards doing that.
But not totally.
But not totally.
Gotcha. And so, and that's an ongoing issue, right?
I mean, it is. And again, in
your job, do you feel sometimes your hands are tied as to how much you can do if you've got someone accused of something, yet, you know, we're innocent until proven guilty, so an accusation is just that at some point.
It is.
You can only do certain things, can't you?
You can only do certain things. I would say that, yes, I feel like there is, I don't know that hands are tied here in Farmington is a good expression, but when I look around the state, some of the things you're even seeing down in Albuquerque, I think that the chief's hands have been tied down there. I think that they have tried to get rid of some actors that they wanted to get rid of and haven't been able to accomplish that. But, you know, it also belies the overwhelming number of officers that are doing just a very good job by our communities. And, you know, so as we focus on the bad actors, that was part of my objection to all of the police reform legislation that we heard this year, is there's such an emphasis on punishing bad actors, punishing departments that don't deal with bad actors, that there's almost silence over the fact that we have so many good officers. And in the middle of the session, one of our state police officers gave his life, you know, protecting our communities. And it almost kind of passes in the night as a whisper. The same thing up in Boulder. So the officer with seven kids of his own charges in and gets killed trying to protect people in a mass shooting. And it's almost a whisper. You know, what began then was a conversation about what the race of the suspect was, not the actions of the officer. And so, you know, some of that is, I think, demoralizing for our men and women in law enforcement, and I think it makes it harder for us to recruit and retain officers in the field, too.
Sure. Well, and I think we see that in almost every profession, though, don't you? We have a lot of good doctors, but there's a few bad ones, and they get sued in malpractice. We've got some, I've heard they're good lawyers, and then once in a while there's maybe a bad one in the group and they get in trouble. I mean, broadcasters, journalists, same thing. I'm not saying that we're immune from that either.
Sure.
I think every profession finds that, but it is unfortunate, I think, that sometimes in your profession, law enforcement, that is under higher scrutiny because of the job that you do.
Yes, I think so too.
For good and for bad.
For good and for bad.
Yes. Let me talk about, so the legislation that was passed, and I know there was some concern, too, about getting input from law enforcement about some of these things, and that, I don't think, happened as much as you would have liked if it happened at all.
You know, it eventually happened.
Okay. Well, eventually is better than never,
that's
I suppose.
Right. You know, there was conversations, so the legislature at the special session had developed a commission that met during the fall to look at the qualified immunity question. And they did take some very limited testimony from law enforcement. But, you know, in the end, there wasn't, and I said this in one of my testimonies before them, I haven't heard a single chief or sheriff testify in favor of HB4, and I hadn't heard a single plaintiff attorney testify against it, which almost tells you everything you need to know about the bill, right? There wasn't an effort to, hey, how can we make this something that you guys can live with and won't negatively impact your ability to recruit and retain, but will still accomplish what we want, which is greater accountability for bad actors. You know, I think there's plenty of things we can talk about to make that a more realistic outcome, but, you know, when the outcome is just kind of predestined, it probably is a little more frustrating.
Sure. Understand. My guest this morning, Farmington Police Chief Stephen Hebby, is here with me talking a little bit about police reform in New Mexico. One of those efforts is House Bill 4, right?
Mm-hmm.
State
yes,
Bill
sir.
4 that is passed and is awaiting the governor's signature. And it's part of a larger bill. And as you said at the beginning of the program, it really changed from what it started out looking like with amendments and things like that to the final version that was passed by both houses at the state legislature, something that's a bit more appetizing, I guess, for you.
It is.
Good to know. The other thing I want to ask you about is going back to January 6th and the riots at the nation's capital, the U.S. Capitol, of course. And in some of those investigations, now that they come forth, there were some members of local law enforcement that were involved with that. And so, as a chief, and to be clear, no one, at least as far as we know, from the Farmington Police Department, were involved in anything like that. But you know, it's a free country. People have a right to do those types of things, but if they break the law, I suppose then there's other consequences in your policy that would take over. But how do you, I guess, screen someone for things like that, or how do you make sure that everyone's on the same page, that you don't have any underlying racial or political undertones that could cause a problem in the department as a whole.
So that's, I mean, that's a good and a complex question all
right.
at once.
As I was saying it, this is very complex. It was going through my head. Yes, sir.
You know, the people do have a right to have their opinion on things. And so, and we don't always agree with those opinions, whatever they may be. In this case, what you had was people that went out to a big protest or a big rally, whatever you want to call it, on January 6th and wanted to express their opinion. Okay, you know, I don't think there's anything that we or really any employer could do about that. If you want to go on your off-duty time to have your say, you can do that.
Right, but you're not wearing your uniform, you're not wearing your badge,
right.
You're not identifying as part of the bigger organization.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And that's just policy. It's been there forever.
It has. And it's law.
Yes.
So departments through the years that have acted against employees that did that have won cases, and the courts have established that you can't be representing a public employer in particular when you're expressing your opinions. So that part is okay. The part that then was troubling, I think, for every chief and for many citizens across the country was when police officers engaged in the illegal storming of the Capitol and actually made access. You know, at the least, what they're doing is trespassing and burglary and damaging things, and at the worst, what they're doing is insurrection, depending on your perspective on it, depending on how the courts are eventually going to rule in these cases. But that caused a lot of angst, I think, among law enforcement leadership as well as the public. What do we know our officers are doing, and what can we do about it? And oftentimes, you don't know, and so there's the devil in the details. You know, we have a very robust internal affairs section. So as far as accountability in policing, I'll tell you, I will stack up what happens in law enforcement against any profession. So you mentioned lawyers and you mentioned doctors. They don't have anything close to the very robust internal affairs system that we have, as well as an unbelievable number of policies. So if a lawyer's rude to you or if a doctor's rude to you, you know, there's no board for you to call and now you're going to complain, they're going to do an investigation, they're going to suspend him for a day. That doesn't happen. What does happen in policing is exactly that. If you're mistreated by a police officer, you don't like his demeanor, you don't like his attitude, you don't like the report he wrote, you call in, we do an investigation, and we hold him accountable in whatever form that looks like, depending on the violation. In the case of Farmington PD, we have two sergeants that are assigned full-time to internal affairs. We have two other sergeants that are assigned full-time to our use of force team. So we're looking at all force that our officers use, and we're looking at all our conduct that our officers use. And then within that, we have a very detailed policy manual that includes social media policy. Some of that is what can they post, what are they talking about. We receive complaints about officers' social media posts. We do investigations into those. We have held officers accountable when they've violated that. We have not seen anything along the racial or the misogynistic lines, but we have seen things that are just inappropriate. And we've taken action in those cases. So I would tell you for some of the big departments, Seattle, Portland, Chicago, Philadelphia, probably hard to track what all of their officers are doing when they're in the thousands. For us, we're about 130 officers, give or take. It's much easier for us to keep pretty close tabs on, and to my knowledge as well, we have not had anybody participate in that protest.
Right, and I guess the punishment then for like a social media post or something, it certainly is, I guess, varies depending on what the infraction was, right?
Exactly.
And it's all put in a policy, right? So it's not secret.
It's not.
And
secret.
It's very transparent. If someone wanted to know, they could find out.
Yes.
There you go. And so. You know, certainly Farmington and San Juan County, we have a multi-ethnic population, and certainly the police department and the sheriff's office and have interactions with minorities all the time, every day, through the course of doing your job. So there's always got to be, at least in my mind, training is always a big part of your officers getting onto the job of how to deal with these different ethnic minority populations. Because we've seen it in our community, not recently, and we're very grateful for that, that we've seen some interactions that maybe not have gone as well. And so how big a part, I guess, is the training for your officers so that we try to avoid some of these dust-ups, problems, violence, whatever the case may be, with the folks that they're designed to serve?
You know, that actually goes to the bill that we did support, that police chiefs were almost unanimously in support of, and that was SB 375. That bill deals with more fully funding the Law Enforcement Academy. So every officer goes through an academy when they first get hired. There's several satellite academies, including one here in San Juan County, that we send the majority of our officers to. But there's also the main academy is down in Santa Fe. That has been funded at a point where they were at 35 to 40% of their staffing. And this is where your officers are coming in and ground level, learning to be a police officer. And we're not investing the funds on the front end, and then we're expecting better results on the back end. So this bill increased funding for the Law Enforcement Academy by $6 million a year. So that's a lot of money for what they ordinarily get. It's a significant investment in training. And that's where myself as a chief, the HB4 that we talked about, one of the tweaks that they did make to it was, it was over 3 years, so an event could occur, and within 3 years, somebody could sue. Well, don't present that as you're fixing policing when 3 years go by, and I don't even know what's happened. We don't even know it's there. But 3 years later, they hit us with a lawsuit. Now, how did policing improve during that? Well, I said that often, and apparently somebody was listening because they lowered it down to a year. So if it's with a police department, you are now obligated to notify the department of the time and circumstance and location of what occurred within a year of the event. Well, that gives me some hope of reforming. But really, all of that is punishment on the back end after something's happened. What we were wanting is more investment on the front end, more training. How do we deal with folks who are in mental crisis? What kind of things are we looking at for cultural diversity training? How do we handle procedural justice and implicit bias? Are we talking with our departments about those things? And even to the issue of social media and extremism, are we investing in training our officers that this is what's acceptable and this is what's not? And if we're not, then, you know, I don't care how often you sue us on the back end, you're going to have those lawsuits and nothing's going to change. So I think we need to do a better job of continuing to invest in training. I get that it's frustrating when something goes wrong. We have had our own messes here. I absolutely know that we have, and I take responsibility for those. But the only way to fix those is by better training on the front end and consistently training your officers and having good policies that enforce those things. And I think that we are doing a better job in New Mexico than we were 10 years ago. My look forward is that we will continue to be better in policing here in New Mexico over the next decade.
And that bill, what's the status of that bill? I'm trying to remember myself.
That passed as well.
375 is that one. So, and that awaits the governor's signature as well.
It does.
Or veto or whatever she decides to do. But,
yes.
But that is, did pass the legislature. Interesting. And so, Chief, and I know you have been a big proponent, at least I think that you have been, and I'm pretty sure you have been, about transparency. And in fact, I just saw an article, I think you shared it on your Facebook page, about a media outlet in Maine interviewing you about your decision to release body camera footage from certain incidents that have happened within the city and doing it quickly. And I guess that's maybe that my question is, how important is it for the public to see some of this body cam footage, things like that, quickly after a potentially controversial incident?
I think it's extremely important. You know, I was not a huge fan of body cameras when I got down here. We did not have them in Anchorage. We didn't have in-car video. So San Juan County, both the Sheriff's Office and FPD had in-car video for maybe a decade before. Anchorage had none. We were just starting to get it when I left. FPD had started body cams about 6 months before I got down here. But once you get into it, and especially in this environment that we're talking about right now, Scott, where we are very heavily under scrutiny, it's better for me, it's better for the community, it's better for the officers that their body cam footage is A, available, that we have it, and then B, that we're getting it out fairly quickly. And so the main station had contacted us following one of our recent incidents and just wanted to talk because they're discussing body cams up in Maine, and there's been resistance to it, that they won't be able to get things out, that it'll interfere with the investigation. And honestly, as fast as I get stuff out, it is not universally supported in law enforcement circles. We've certainly had some debates about how quickly I'm getting it out. Basically, what we do at FPD is, in particular, an officer-involved shooting. There's your biggest one. Once all the officers have been interviewed, then we're releasing the footage. By keeping the footage back, that means the officer is giving his statement on what he remembers happened, not on what he sees, and then his statement changes to what he sees on the body camera. You give your statement to the investigators the best that you remember it to be, and once those statements are sealed, though, now they're given. Now we release the footage. The investigation is continuing, it's true, but now the public gets to see what their officers were facing, for good or for bad. And I think, really, when you've looked through the 7 years that I've been here, I think we've had 7 shootings, if I'm not mistaken, in that time period. I would defy anyone to walk me back through any of those that I've released, because I've released the footage on all of them with a statement from me on what we saw and what we looked at. I would challenge anyone to look back through there and tell us where we shouldn't have done what we did. We can always do things a little better, but unfortunately in those instances that we've wound up in these shootings, the officers have had a limited number of options. This latest one where the subject is actually throwing Molotov cocktails at us, you know, your options just are limiting. When time and distance shrink, that gives the police fewer options. When we're able to get some time and distance, slow things down, keep distance away from the subject, you know, we can work wonders, and we do. But in the instances that we've seen through the years, one of them, the subject's wanted for attempted murder out of Colorado. He's up in a ceiling in the motel. He drops out of the ceiling and comes up swinging a knife, and you see the knife just barely misses the officer before the officers open fire. So when you see things like that, I think that it's good for the public, and I think it helps the officers.
Right. Well, and I would agree with that, too, and I think it also shows some of those split-second decisions that the officers are needing to make. And as you mentioned, I think it's important that you always say that perhaps things could have been improved, but in a lot of cases, what happened was mostly justified, and you can see that in the video. At least it helps to explain your case a little bit to the public.
I think so, too, and I think the public deserves it. When we have an enormous power as police officers, and I'm keenly aware of that. So when we use force and we hurt or kill a citizen of our community, the public deserves to see what happened and why we did it. And they better be hearing from me or from whoever the chief is as to what he thinks. You know, is this justified? Do we need to make improvements in our training? Do we need better policies? Or is this a bad actor who made a bad decision? All of those things are legitimate questions. I think the public has a right to ask all of those and expect from me an honest and fair and quick answer.
Understood. And it's always a tragedy.
It is. It's terrible.
When this happens, when an incident escalates, yep, into some type of violence, whether it's death, injury, or what have you. Chief, I wanted to ask you, we just have a couple of minutes remaining this morning, I wanted to ask you a bit about the policy, this defund the police type of label that's going around, probably not the most descriptive and accurate label about that, but the idea to maybe talk more about less policing necessarily, but maybe more thoughts about maybe social work, mental health, those types of things. And that's something that I think you have brought to Farmington Police. We've talked about it before, but it's an ongoing policy about more mental health training for your officers. And also, I think, patrolling with some other mental health professionals. So maybe when you encounter individuals who are struggling, having a problem, whatever causes their encounter with law enforcement, that maybe the situation can be de-escalated rather than escalated and causing some of these violent interactions, which nobody really wants to see.
You know, you aren't going to find too many police chiefs, if they're really being forthright with you, that are going to say they're not for some form of defunding the police. What we're talking about, though, is, you know, how and when is that done, and what does that look like? And so what you saw around the country is people got all whipped up and emotional, and defund the police became a campaign, and we started stripping money from budgets, and then trying to create programs on the backside. Well, the reason the police budgets are what they are is because there's a need right now. Not 6 months from now, not 6 years from now. There's a need right now, and so the police have gradually adopted more and more responsibility throughout my 30 years in policing. We far more often are dealing with people with substance abuse, with alcohol problems, with mental health problems, and the police become the 24-hour kind of de facto response unit. Well, you can set up a system where you've got more resources going to those behind the scenes and then slowly begin to wean the police departments off of that as these other entities begin picking up that responsibility, right? So then there's always somebody answering for it. Instead, what you saw in Minneapolis is an excellent example, is they began slashing budgets on the front end. There was nothing created on the back end to handle those very same problems other than some nice ideas. Those ideas didn't prove fruitful and certainly didn't prove it very quickly. And so you just saw Minneapolis threw $6 million more back at the police budget. They're down over 200 officers. And what I can tell you is it takes about a year from the time I say, yes, let's hire, until we get an officer hired through the academy, through field training, and he's on his own. So when they're down 200 officers, you're talking years that Minneapolis PD will be a shell of what it was and will not be meeting the needs of its community. So we have tried through my 7 years here to incorporate things like It was actually Dave Burke with the fire department, the alternate response unit, the ARU. That's where initially it was police and fire officers responded around to man down calls, which we get a fair number of here. Eventually now that's just become the work of the fire department, the police component. We didn't need a police officer in all these instances. We're called from time to time. But you see us going out proactively trying to make contact with people. Same thing is true. We have a van now that drives around looking for some of the street inebriates that maybe just need a ride. They don't need contact with the police. They're not looking for a confrontation. They just need a ride to the sobering center. So we're doing that now. We have created at the PD, and I know the sheriff's office has something similar, and that's our crisis intervention team, our CIT. And that's where we receive calls in the middle of the night from somebody who's off his meds or having some sort of mental crisis. The patrol officers respond and deal with it, but then they also give that information back over their shoulder to our crisis intervention team. Those officers begin working with other mental health professionals and with the individual in a proactive manner to try and get them through the crisis or back on their medication or whatever they need so that you don't continue to see negative contacts with the police. For us, it's really a lot is let's try and reduce the frequency with which we have these encounters, and that will reduce the frequency of negative outcomes. But it's a slow process, and along that trail, Scott, honestly, you're going to have some failings where things don't go so well. And one of those we saw with the Molotov cocktail incident. The subject actually appears to be a decent enough person who's off his medication. We just had another one that I was testifying in the sentencing hearing on. He was off his medication. He was a veteran. It was in October. He was shooting rounds around the neighborhood, including towards our SWAT vehicle when we responded. We were able to work through that without a shooting, and we did successfully de-escalate, but now he's in the criminal justice system, and you know what we're looking for is him to really robustly interact with the mental health system so that we don't see a repeat of that.
Right, and that's, I guess, indicative of all these different cases that can go lots of different directions and the outcomes that maybe the public and maybe the media, for our fault, doesn't follow up on to see how these individuals are doing 6 months later, 12 months later, whatever, right, whatever the case may be. But it goes every different direction you can possibly imagine, I'm sure.
It does. And it's, you know, unfortunately, media is so much now about there's an element of entertainment, right? And maybe it always was in your day. When it bleeds, it leads, but was a saying forever. But it definitely is the case these days. It's very competitive. It's a lot of entertainment. The glitz is in those singular encounters that go badly, and not in the numerous ones where our officers do a great job. So you could really do a spotlight article on how we responded to that incident in October. But I can tell you, more articles have been written about the one that ended in us having to shoot than the one where we did a great job and it didn't end in us shooting, even though we were being shot at. So, you know, that as long as that's the verb that, you know, we're going to look past the ones where the officers do a good job and are able to get out of it and still realize, holy cow, we have a problem in our country. Now, I'm proud of San Juan County. I'll just plug the county real quick. I think they really stepped up and are continuing to step up on mental health treatment here, and they just opened a new facility.
That's
and
right.
They're looking to try and do some more on that subject, and I am 100% for that. Anything that will help, A, help citizens, and B, help citizens avoid negative encounters with other people and with the police is a win for us as a community.
I agree 100%. Well, Chief, before we go, I know you want to put a plug in about recruiting. After all we talked about, you want folks to join the organization.
We
but
do.
I know for folks who have dedicated their lives to law enforcement, it really is a calling for many people. It's not just a career, just like journalism, I would say for myself. I don't know about everybody, but it's just a calling, and you know you're not going to get rich doing it, but you're serving the public, you're serving your community, and I think that's why you're in this job, because I know you could do a bunch of other things probably that you might think about from time to time, but I think your heart's really in law enforcement.
Well, it really is, and you're right. We probably need right now about 15 people.
That's Farmington PD.
Farmington PD needs 15 good people, and I've said it before, you know, anybody can be a police officer when you're Andy Taylor and everything's going quiet. That's a, you know,
wow. Mayberry,
North Carolina.
You're dating
Carolina.
Yourself there, Chief.
Dating
okay.
myself a little bit.
All right. Yes, sir. Black and white. Yes.
But anybody can do it when there isn't a lot of scrutiny. There is a lot of scrutiny right now. On top of it, there's a lot of folks that have opinions about how to be police officers. And I'm telling you, we need 15 people right now. Now is the time to call the Farmington Police Department and start down a career path where you actually are making a difference in the community. And it's one of my favorite quotes. Scott can maybe find it later on. It's by Teddy Roosevelt. And he talks about the man in the arena and how the person that matters is the one who spends themselves on a worthy cause. Whether they succeed or fail, they are trying to make a difference. And it's not with the people that just sit back and snipe. And we've got so much on social media, the trolls that always have an opinion but are rarely stepping up, if ever. Right now, we need you. So if you have any interest in policing, now is the time. And the Farmington Police Department is hiring. We don't care your political, we don't care race, religion, none of it. We need 15 good people to come join us, and I hope that you will. Thank
there,
you.
There you go. Thank you, Chief. And that begins that two-year training and commitment from those potential officers, right, to
exactly.
Join
yes,
you on the streets of Farmington.
Exactly.
So, very good. We hope we find you some
thank
today.
You.
Thank you for coming in, Chief Hebby. I always appreciate your insights, your openness, your transparency, and your willingness to talk with me about almost any issue that I come up with. So, I appreciate it.
We didn't talk football today. So
we did not talk football, but we'll have to do that maybe back.
But thanks for having me.
You bet. It's always a pleasure. Thanks, sir. Chief Hebby, Steve Hebby from Farmington Police, my guest this morning here on KSJE. And I'll be back with more in just a moment, everyone. The time right now is 8:51.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.